Hello and welcome to the Podfather.
Oh, that's the worst thing we've ever done.
Should we do it again?
No. Let's keep it in. We've got to be honest. We're an honest podcast. This is another episode that we've recorded a while ago, hopefully, by the hear it.
Could be years ago. This could be like a time vault.
It could be.
You never know.
But not so long ago that it was before the reboot. It was going
before
to be.
Before the Podfather reboot.
It was going to be, yeah. We actually, when you were still in London, we were going to do an episode on Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Impossible, because I watched it on the way home.
Well, we decided to do it while you were in London.
We've had this. I actually have to apologize to my dear friend Jack, who told me to watch this movie for literally years before I watched it. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, you can come on the Podfather when we talk about it. So if I've done my due diligence, maybe Jack will appear in this episode in an audio clip.
Oh, I can't wait.
But I guess we won't know. You'll know, audience, soon, maybe. So spoilers for the episode, there may or may not be an audio clip from Jack.
It's a big spoiler. There may or may not be.
I feel like there probably will be now that I've said it, but let's hope. We'll never know.
This might come out ages after we've recorded it.
Exactly.
Because we are trying to give you fortnightly episodes. And sometimes we haven't been able to record properly because we've been busy boys. And in the past, we've just had months at a time where we slip and we fall and we can't get back up. But now we've got a fail safe in place. We once did a filler episode and we talked about haircuts.
Yeah, do we have any follow-up from the old filler episode? We talked about haircuts. We talked about a couple movies that weren't gangster
Legally
films.
Legally Blonde, I believe.
You talked about Legally Blonde. I talked about Alien, which we actually
saw it together in IMAX, which was incredible.
Do you want to tell me briefly what you thought about that, actually, to tie up the loose end of Jordan, you're going to watch Alien one day?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It is a movie you must see before you die.
It is.
It is an amazing film, and I'm almost glad that I didn't watch it sooner, because seeing it in IMAX, space movies on the big screen are just the best.
And at IMAX.
Yeah.
They make a lot of sense.
Exactly. Did you see Ad Astra?
Is that out?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I saw it with Liam.
Okay, I want to watch it.
Yeah, space movies, man. Oh, it's exciting. And we'd seen First Man a couple of weeks prior, or maybe later. And we were just in a space mood. Alien is a perfect movie.
I feel like it was the 40th anniversary of Alien.
I think it is a perfect film.
Thank you.
I think structurally, the way it's shot, the horror elements where they don't give everything away, so you're really scared of this alien through the whole thing, and it's all practical effects. Oh, it's gorgeous. It's one of the best films I've ever seen in my whole life.
Holds up.
It holds up.
Holds up perfectly.
Incredibly. So there you go. Follow up of that. That's a movie you must see before you die. Have you seen Legally Blonde?
No.
Oh.
Stay tuned for next time when Alex finally watches Legally Blonde.
Well, so yes, we were going to do this episode a year ago. And in fact, I wrote my notes on Dirty Rotten Scoundrels in my old book, which I haven't written in since.
He's brought his old book. That was the last thing you wrote?
Yeah, because now I've been doing it electronically.
Oh.
And since then, though, the remake came out, The Hustle, starring Anne Hathaway, Rebel Wilson. And so we're going to talk about both of those movies today so that we have films to talk about, crime films, sort of
heisty, well,
they're more like capery conmen. Yeah. But before that, as always, it's time to talk about biscuits. Yes, it's Arnott's time.
Biscuit reviews.
It's biscuit review, but we're still only Arnott's done Arnott's. So.
Oh!
Well, we've done an episode on the Kingston, but today's episode, we're talking about the Monte Carlo.
Which I feel like is very well done and obvious, because both of these films are predominantly set in the south of France.
Yes, in
which
the French
Monte Carlo
Riviera.
Is obviously in a different country, but it's basically France.
So there you go. That's your geography lesson for this episode. Also found in like the assorted variety pack.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a Kingston, but with red filling instead of brown.
Wow.
I believe.
That's the only difference?
Well, I don't know because these are one of those biscuits that I avoid like the plague.
It looks like there's a lot of air in that packet. It's going to pop.
There's just been an explosion, a Monte Carlo explosion. No, there hasn't. There hasn't. But we're going to open the packet and give it a try.
Oh, but these are... Oh, that's right. Oh. Oh, I got a double. Double whammy. I'm going to break it apart. These are much bigger than the Kingstons. These are how... This is as bad as big as a Kingston should be.
And these are more ovular.
Yeah.
Ovular. That sounds like a weird word. And yes, they've got a sort of pinky filling instead of the brown of a Kingston. They smell a bit more shortbready, perhaps.
A bit more.
Because the Kingston was a bit more Anzac-y.
Iced Vovo-y.
We need to do Iced Vovo.
We've got to do Iced Vovos.
Mm. Now, you said this is as big as a Kingston should be. The problem is the more biscuit there is, the drier the mouthfeel.
Yeah, it's drier than a Kingston. It's a different kind of biscuit to a Kingston, though.
It's like I just licked some flour.
It's not as good as a Kingston.
No.
And if this was... This is... I kind of feel like this is one of the last... You're putting it down. John's putting it down.
I'm not going to finish.
In disgust. This is kind of avoided in the assortment packet, I think. It doesn't get picked up quickly. At least I don't see them get picked up quickly.
No. What's the filling?
Well, I don't know. It's pink and white. I mean, the problem is with...
Oh, it's just kind of sugary.
Yeah. I don't mind it. It's a bit like a jammy, fake jammy type thing.
That sucked. That Monte Carlo sucked.
It doesn't evoke... Having not been to Monte Carlo, I don't know... But it doesn't really evoke feelings of Monte Carlo in my mind.
No.
So they need to work on that. How do they name these things anyway?
If you don't mind standing by, I'll find out. I'm gonna Google Monte Carlo biscuit, find out where William Arnott, the great William Arnott.
This one that I've got is actually not been packaged correctly. It's skewed. It's not matching. The ovals are offset. So I might have to hand this back and say this is a defective biscuit.
Monte Carlo biscuits are an Australian sweet biscuit that have been manufactured since 1926.
Wow.
By Arnott's Biscuits Holdings. Each biscuit comprises two biscuit layers, sandwiching a creamy filling. While many such biscuits are molded to a design, both sides of the Monte Carlo biscuits... are rough. I don't
rough like
know
a Monegasque.
Why they're named, but they've got their own Wikipedia page.
Well, that's good. Is there like an Arnott's Wiki?
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe we should start that up.
It's a vanilla flavored cream filling surrounded by a thin toffee like coating of raspberry jam. Mm,
can I have another one?
You can have the whole packet.
Well, I'm not gonna eat that many. I don't mind them. They're growing on me.
The biscuits were named...
Here we go.
...after the city of Monte Carlo. Oh, and the average mass is 20.8 grams, and it is the heaviest biscuit available in the assorted creams pack.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, you know what? Look, I don't love it. It's no Kingston. What do we give Kingstons?
4.5.
What?
Oh, Kingston. No. We gave them big money.
Big money.
Yeah, we gave Kingston high score. Kingston, 8.75.
Oh, that's amazing. It's not Kingston, but I'll give it a 6.5.
I'm giving me a 3. So,
jeez.
That's 9.5 divided by 2, which is 4.75, which means that it is above the TV snacks.
Malt sticks.
Malt sticks. And Tim Tam Messina Black Forest. But below Tim Tam Mango on 6 is the next highest.
I can't imagine Tim Tam Mango was a good biscuit.
No. No, I think we were being more generous then. So what did we give it? 4.75. Monte Carlo.
Would you watch with films like Gangs of New York?
Yes. Yes, you absolutely would.
And maybe even...
Oh, you're going to have to edit this so heavily. There's so many pauses.
Maybe even Joker.
Maybe even Joker, which had a 5.
Not too far away.
4.75. We actually have no films on 4.75. So Tequila Sunrise on 5, Joker on 5, and then King of New York, Gangs of New York, 4.25. Somewhere in the middle is the Monte Carlo.
Thanks, Monty.
Yes, I tell you what, this segment worked better when we were videoing it. I think listeners, tell us what you think, because I know that when we were videoing it, our listeners, we had an audience just for those videos.
That's true. That's true.
Whereas I don't know if those same people will be listening to these episodes to get their biscuit review fix. So those of you who are listening to the episode to hear us talk about movies, what do you think about the Arnott's time? Because everyone was saying to bring it back, bring it back. But now that we've brought it back, I'm all about listening to the people.
Well, whenever this episode eventually goes live.
There might have been a dozen biscuits in between that we're not mentioning. We're going to add 2 movies to the list right now, and they are Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and The Hustle.
We're doing it together because in the past we have done, so we did, for instance, Ocean's 11, the original one, 1960.
About that.
And then Ocean's 11, the remake, 2001.
One.
We did, those are separate episodes, then Ocean's 8 as well, a bit of a trilogy if you want to go back through the archives. We also did Going in Style, 1979, and Going in Style, 2017.
Yes, we did.
But this time, and I think in the future, if they're too super important, or if the original one's, you know, a big deal and it's a remake, you know, we might still do separate episodes, but for a bit more of your, you know, off-the-cuff entertainment, we're going to merge some of the remake things together, I think.
Yes, and a lot of our movies have been remakes, like Scarface, for instance.
True, true. So that's a good example. I think that they sit well as 2 separate
episodes.
And some
of them have remakes that we haven't talked about, like Get Carter, for instance, which has a Sly Stallone remake.
Recently?
No, ages ago, I think. Not recently. But
which one's Get Carter?
With Bartle Kate, who we've got to talk about today.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We should watch that.
The
point is that we're going to do them together sometimes, because at the end of the day, we often will compare and contrast the films if they're remakes.
Mm-hmm.
So why not have one episode about the 2 films?
Both are remakes.
Oh, what?
Yes.
What?
So we're only talking about 2 of them today, but yesterday I watched The Hustle in the morning, found out it was a remake of a remake. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is a remake of a film from 1976 or something.
So not even that long.
No, 60s. It must have been the 60s. And it's got Marlon Brando in it.
You're joking.
And it's called Bedtime Story. And it's the same movie as Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, almost word for word, except there's a plot in Bedtime Stories where Marlon Brando is like trying to sleep with some German women. He does his little like, oh, my grandmother grew up in this town. Oh, that is my house, yeah. Because he shows them a picture and then he like sleeps with them. And that's his con.
Wait, have you seen this movie?
Yeah, I watched it yesterday. It's on YouTube, the whole thing. So I watched the same movie like 2.5 times.
How long is it?
An hour and a half. The same as The Hustle. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is a bit longer.
And was Bedtime Stories any good? Is it worth us doing...
Not Bedtime Stories. That's an Adam Sandler movie from about 2007.
Sorry, Bedtime Story.
Like I said, it's pretty much the same movie.
Is it worth us doing another episode on?
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. But I will tell you a little bit about it today during our proceedings.
Okay, well, that's news to me because I really thought The Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was an original film.
Mm-hmm. So that's changed everything for you.
It's changed everything for
Directed
me.
Directed by Frank Oz.
Yeah.
From The Muppets and Little Shop of Horrors he directed, as well as a few other things. The Dark Crystal he directed with Jim Henson as well. Also, he plays Yoda in Star Wars. That Frank Oz. Directed.
It's the very same.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, starring Steve Martin in the Marlon Brando role and Michael Caine. You want to talk a little bit about their dynamic?
Well, let me just start by saying Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is a must-see comedy of a different time.
Yes.
Some parts of it may not have aged super well, which was interesting in the remake as well, because it was made only this year.
Came out this year.
And they did some things that I thought they wouldn't do.
1964 it came out.
The original story. Original. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is just a fantastic film with two elite actors of the time. Classic pairing. It was going to work. It was going to be funny.
They offered it to David Bowie and Mick Jagger.
What?
Maybe not offered it to, but they were developing it after the Dancing in the Street video. They were like, this could be a project for these bad boys.
Well,
these Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Can I tell you something? I would love nothing more than to see that movie, but I tell you it would not be good.
It would not be good.
No offense, guys, but it's not your jam. Anyway, the premise is, which I suppose is shared between the three movies, is that you've kind of got a elite con man who knows exactly what he's doing, a really suave character who meets on a train a not-so-suave street con man type, or con women, as is in the remake.
Con artist. Confidence artist.
Confidence. And what ends up happening is they sort of end up working together, competing against each other, all that kind of stuff, until the very end, spoiler alerts, where they get conned by their main target.
Yes.
Is that shared with Bedtime Story?
Bedtime Story, the twist at the end is that Marlon Brando actually wins and gets married to her, and that's how he loses, because he's now got an old ball and chain. And he just wanted to sleep with the German women, but then he ends up marrying the soap heiress or whatever. And
It should be said
she's
as
not
well,
a con artist.
There's a bit of a
right.
So they added the kind of ending bit.
Yes, which is amazing. It's one of the best twists the best of all time.
Yeah, it's a fantastic twist. So there's also a bit of a love triangle that occurs between the con artists and their target. In the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, it is a lovely lady. And in The Hustle, it is a young tech or supposedly techie man.
Yes, in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Glenn Headley plays Janet Colgate. And
right,
she's very good.
And I think you're right. It's one of the best twists, because for the first time you watch, I guess, any of these films, well, either of these films, you just don't see it coming. It's not obvious at all, I don't think. And they
rewatch,
yeah,
when you know what's happening, it's so expertly played.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that's right. And I actually think that, like, because I remember I watched Dirty Rotten Scoundrels on the plane ride home, and then I went to see The Hustle basically around the time it came out. And
you're one of the three people that contributed to its box office.
Yep. which, by the way, is Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson.
Yes.
And I think I forgot what was going to happen in that film. I was like, oh, right, he turns on them. No shit. So the story and the writing does a really good job of just kind of putting yourself into this false sense of security of they're trying to take advantage of this target.
Yeah.
And hilarity is supposed to ensue.
Is supposed to. And is that because in The Hustle, hilarity rarely ensues?
Yeah. I don't know. It's not. I love Anne Hathaway. I think she did a pretty good job. The thing that disappointed me about The Hustle was. And this is what I find interesting about Hollywood. Like, I kind of thought that we were a little bit past doing word-for-word remakes, which The Hustle is essentially, aside from a new opening, it opens differently with Rebel Wilson doing a con in like a club.
Meghan Trainor.
Oh, yeah, Meghan Trainor. It opens differently. And when it opens differently, I was like, oh, cool, this is going to be a different movie. Like, I was, like, excited to see the same concept of high high rise, high class.
Yeah.
Con artist meets low class con artist, and whatever happens, happens. I was excited to see that with a female cast in 2019 in the modern era, but it ended up just being a word for word remake. And I just don't really
beat
get
the beat. It's, and there's all three movies share similar beats. Basically, the openings are all slightly different. Mm. You know that there's a high class person conning people. In the original and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, it's the prince of a land and oh, but he's you can't tell that he's a prince, and then some poor woman, Fanny Eubanks, gives the money or something,
yeah,
or something like that. Anyway, and then how do you know the prince? What prince? Because he's now sent the competition away, the Steve Martin character. And then he comes back, or she comes back. Rebel Wilson comes back now with someone else, and then, yeah, there's every beat, like the train beat, the then bringing a hot person to, so that they stay an extra stop onto the train.
Yes,
that happens.
Yes, yes.
Every time. Yeah, the decoy. Dr. Schaffhausen is in every movie. Also in the original and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, they do Cousin Ruprecht.
Now, this is what I was kind of going to bring up. Now, what was Dirty Rotten Scoundrels? 80-something?
88.
88. So Steve Martin does it. One of the characters that he's doing as part of this con is that it's – what is it? It's the principality con where they're a royalty,
mm-hmm.
but the catch, and they're wooing someone to try and get all their money, la la la. The catch is they've got like a mentally challenged sibling or cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess back then it was funny for Steve Martin to do that. He did those things, and that was kind of a thing that comedians did. But I don't think that's really funny anymore. And that's probably the only part of that film that I don't think aged very well because of that simple fact. And, you know, I'm not going to cancel the movie, but it's just one of those things you have to just say, okay, look, they used to do those kind of jokes. We don't do them anymore. That's it.
And there's another, there's a whole nother sort of, let's say, disability plot line later in the movie. In the original and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, the Steve Martin Brando Rebel Wilson character is in a wheelchair to try and get sympathy from the target.
Well, and that you're
and
right.
That's why Dr. Schaffhausen is needed. But the Rebel Wilson character is blind.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't do the wheelchair gags. They do blind gags instead.
Which actually, at the end of the day, is still. I mean, that I don't think the wheelchair thing ages very well either. Although it's not as bad as the mentally challenged impression.
Mm.
But I mean, yeah. I mean, the blind thing as well. I mean, I don't know if that is actually that funny.
I don't think it was funny, and I'd much rather see someone pretending and making an ass of themselves about being in a wheelchair and then getting the comeuppance of getting slapped on the legs multiple times.
Yes.
That, to me, that's much more funny, actually, than someone pretending to be blind.
Because,
and then drinking wine when no one's looking, like, fuck.
And my main point was, you're right, that was bad. And doing, because Rebel Wilson does the cousin thing as well, the mentally challenged impression, whatever you want to call that, I was actually really surprised that they did that. I feel like that's not, like, cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was a bit like...
Yeah, and of course also because it's a Rebel Wilson movie, they lean into her weight a lot.
Mm.
And they do that with every movie that she's in. And I don't necessarily think it's always a bad thing. In the first Pitch Perfect, it's kind of funny, I guess. But that seems to be her whole Hollywood career is I'm fat.
Mm.
And... maybe in one movie, it's like, okay, maybe this is funny. She's making fun of herself. But then it sort of stops being funny after a while because you've heard the jokes before. When, you know, she's making a joke about eating cake. Like, that's, to there me, that's was, not a, a, like the height of comedy.
There was nothing about this, about The Hustle that surprised me about Rebel Wilson's comedy. But I feel like there was quite a few moments that surprised me about Anne Hathaway's comedy because she was very funny. In a way, I don't think I've ever really seen her do a comedy anyway. So that was probably a highlight of that film.
The Princess Diaries.
True.
She's very good in that.
True. But also she's much younger then.
Yeah.
And this was, very different.
This is post-Interstellar Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, post-Catwoman.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah. What were your thoughts on... We've kind of spoken about all three films in all different
all
ways.
All at once. So let's focus on Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yes. Okay. So despite the, you know...
Having aged maybe slightly poorly.
Slightly poorly. Aside from that, everything else in it's just incredible
love
and
it.
Great.
I love it. And I think the dynamic between Michael Caine and Steve Martin isn't one you would immediately choose, but to see them on screen together is incredible. And let me go back to the notes I wrote about a year ago. There's some things, like they're being creepy and gross. When you know that it's pretty much a word-for-word remake of a 1964 film, some of those weaker sex comments and, you know, the sort of, oh, we can't take her money anymore because she doesn't actually have any, but we can play for her. Like, she's the prize now. Like, some of that stuff is a little uncomfortable, I guess. But because of the twist ending where she's been playing them the whole time, I think it negates a lot of that. Not necessarily all of that, but a lot of that.
Because they get the comeuppance.
Yeah. And they're like, you know, women get everything. Let's steal from them for a little bit. And that, I don't know, that's clearly why they remade it in the way that they did. But because of the ending, I don't know that sort of like the gender politics, the iffy gender politics of the movie, like at the end of the day, they're losers. So like I said, I think the movie sort of maybe could be better and they could maybe omit some of those lines. But I don't think at the end it doesn't matter so much.
And it was 88, right?
Yes.
Which is the same year as Tequila Sunrise.
Yes.
Right? And I feel like there's, they get what's coming to them a lot more in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, even though they're, you know, a comedy versus like a supposedly serious drama.
Yes, that's
it was better for the time than other things.
Yes, absolutely. And it's not necessarily surprising to see in a movie, but it's things that we are interested in now and we like to talk about on this podcast. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, like the comedic beats are so expertly like spaced out. The story takes some exciting twists and turns. The sort of who's in front at the time in the con itself changes so frequently and so interestingly when you think someone's got the upper hand, they're so good at what they do and it's a delight to watch. It really is a delight to watch. And it's a reason why, you know, it's on Stan right now. You can watch it.
It's on Stan, is it?
On Stan.
It's a classic.
It is a classic. And then you get to hear Michael Caine do an Aussie accent at the end. like there's just a lot to like about the movie. The music is fun. Frank Oz pays, you know, dues to the movie that he's basing this off. But like I said, it's pretty much the same script and he makes it interesting. They're still at the French Riviera. There's all the same beats, but it definitely feels like an 80s film and it's dynamic. It's a dynamic movie and a funny movie and I think that's why we wanted to do it. And there's crime elements. Yeah.
And like I said, a good twist, the good capery elements too, like good classic tricks played on people, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Sting-esque.
Yeah.
Kind of. See it. You should see Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, 100%.
You absolutely should. Ian McDiarmid's in it. He plays the butler, you know, Palpatine himself.
Yes,
who's about to have a comeback at the end of this year, at the end of 2019.
Great.
and then they decided to remake it.
Yes.
And I have to say that's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Like it was genuinely painful. You know when you're mid-vomit?
Yeah.
And you just know you have to get through it.
So when did you watch it? Like 2 days ago?
I watched it yesterday morning.
Oh, yesterday morning. Sorry I made you watch it.
No.
I watched it in the damn theatre.
I was glad to have watched it. And then I watched the 60s version. Yeah. The 60s version is much more compelling. And I think it's because the story feels a little bit dated. So it's nice to watch it and it be dated. If they'd made a period film instead of like a current contemporary film, I think it would have infinitely lifted it already.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. And they do, I suppose, they changing parts of the story, like they're trying to rip off a supposed tech billionaire, which yeah. they do. I think there's some stuff with phones. They do all
That's
the normal.
That's kind of funny at the end when they are just sending each other money over their phones.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
yeah.
kind of funny, yeah. actually.
But they do a lot of those things to try and just modernize it. But, like, I worry sometimes that a lot of that stuff will, because tech moves so quickly now that, like, you try and date something or you try and modernize something rather, and then it will become dated quicker than Dirty Rotten Scoundrels would be. Like, obviously, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is dated, but we're also still romantic and used to a time where there wasn't mobile phones and that you were yep. just catching a train or, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that you don't catch trains anymore, but you know what I mean? Like all that old style of train with the carriages and la la la. Like, I agree with you. It might have been nice if it was period-pieced. I think that the main thing, though, is that it would have been great if they did more of an Ocean's 8-style remake, which is to change a lot of it. Ocean's 8 is a perfect remake because it's more like Ocean's 11 than I think I thought it was going to be, but it changes so much and nods back enough.
Yeah,
that
the story
it works.
Is different and the characters yeah. are different. Whereas this,
and it's a different
story
height.
Is the same, the characters are the same. Yeah. Except it's literally they've just put woman where man was in the script and vice versa.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then added some jokes that aren't funny. That's kind of what has happened.
Which is not good because on the back of Ocean's 8, this should have been another good
Anne Hathaway
yeah.
remake.
It should have been another good Anne Hathaway remake, another good girl power movie.
I'll tell you what, I wrote some notes when I watched it. One of them says, the most painful movie I've ever watched. Some good things. There were two good jokes at the end. That transferring money gag was yeah. kind of funny. And then there was when the site has been restored, there's a headline or something and tech guy's like, what does it say? And she goes, oh, that's in French, I can't read it. And so he goes, oh. And then he gets something else. I thought that was actually a pretty funny gag. And because they didn't lean too hard on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was the funniest joke in the whole film,
yeah,
I thought.
Yeah, no,
as
I remember that
to,
now.
As opposed to every other time that Rebel Wilson says anything. Oh, I have such a complicated relationship with Rebel Wilson. Because I really quite like her career.
Yeah.
In terms of it being a career. I don't like her creative choices or anything like that. But I think she's made an excellent career for herself doing what she's good at in the same way that Bruce Willis has made a career being Bruce Willis for a lot of it, or Tom Cruise has been a, like, Rebel Wilson can't play anyone except Rebel Wilson. And yet she's making bank doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Good on her. Also, this movie originally received like an R rating in the States, and Rebel Wilson has a law degree. And so she went to the classification board herself and argued that very similar films have been awarded PG-13 with very similar gags, but just because it's a woman saying it.
Wow.
That's why that they'd given it a harsher thing, and they revoked it. That never happens.
Wow,
so
that's
awesome.
So
she is a very, very switched on individual
yeah.
who just gives performances that I don't really care for.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's why I have a complicated relationship with her. But I don't know. She wasn't very watchable in this, I have to say.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there was a couple other moments like that joke that I think I was surprisingly laughing at, but few and far between. Like I said, I think Anne Hathaway was probably funnier. There's also like the sort of weird Aussie element with her too.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a problem for any Australian actor. Like sometimes it's just a bit close to home to watch them doing things in a Hollywood sense.
Yeah.
Which, like, I don't know why we have that complex. It can be really difficult sometimes, but I don't know. What can you do?
What can you do? You can make a good movie. You can make a good movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And the problem...
Exactly.
The only thing this movie has going for it is Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson remake vehicle. That's it. The director is some British comedian that's only directed TV besides this, sort of nobody. The script is basically just the old script. There's no other actors of note in the whole thing, which is fine. Sometimes the best performances come from actors that you've never seen before and will never see again, and that they are the characters. So no disrespect to not having names in your movie, but really there's just a bunch of like really flat performances in a boringly shot movie.
Had you not seen Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, would you have enjoyed it more?
Oh, that's a really good question, because a lot of the time I was hearkening back to the good movie that I'd seen.
Because I guess like there's an element of, I suppose with remakes, the point is for most people to have not seen the original, I guess. Like the masses are not meant to have, are not meant to know this story.
And like something like A Star Is Born was a hugely successful remake last year.
Yes.
And there's been four remakes of that.
Yes.
And people do remember the Christofferson, Barbra Streisand one.
Barbra Streisand.
And they do remember the Judy Garland one. And they maybe remember the one before that. But I hadn't seen any of them.
Well, but I was going to say, I mean, like, okay, so that's a really good example, because I feel like, and, you know, again, you know, why the fuck are we reviewing these films? We're the wrong people. We shouldn't be watching The Hustle, because we've seen Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and we like these crime, heisty, gangster films, whatever. We're the wrong audience, because you're the right audience for A Star Is Born because you hadn't seen the other ones. I'm the right audience for A Star Is Born because I hadn't seen the other ones, and I've only seen the last 10 minutes of A Star Is Born, and I quite enjoyed the last 10 minutes of A Star Is Born.
It's beautiful. I cry every time.
And
in fact, I cry leading up to the last 10 minutes because I know what's going to happen.
Well, everyone that I know, aside from one person who happened to be a music nerd, didn't know about the other Star Is Borns.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we're watching The Hustle. We are watching The Hustle with the wrong eyes. That being said, when you compare and contrast things, and remakes should stand up to being compared and contrasted,
yes,
like Ocean's 8 does, this doesn't.
Yes, and I'll tell you something. Remember when way back in the day, 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, we watched Scarface, The Shame of a Nation?
Yes, your favourite film.
One of my favourite films that we've reviewed. And then we watched the remake. The remake is the one that most people see first.
Yeah, yeah, we did it a funny order then.
Well, we did it in the right order. For history.
For history, but...
And for me too. But maybe if I hadn't seen the...
The wrong order for me.
The original, I would have enjoyed the Pacino one more.
But even... That's a good example, especially for the context of our show. Because even something like Scarface 36 versus 86, 82, 84?
I think it's... Yeah, 80s.
They have some interesting parallels, but enough differences to sort of make it viable. Jordan's flicking through his notebook.
Scarface, Shame of a Nation, 1932.
Oh, 32.
Scarface, 86. 1983.
83. They have enough similarities and differences. Whereas Hustle, A Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, there's not enough.
And
there's
Bedtime
not enough,
Story. And it's Bedtime watching Story. The same movie.
Not enough differences. Not enough differences. And again, Ocean's 11, 1960, Ocean's 11, 2001, plenty of differences. Good remakes. I think it's just, at the end of the day, I think it just comes down to, I mean, have you seen the Kris Kristofferson and Barbra Streisand Star Is Born?
No. No, I might watch it again. I might watch it now that I've...
I'd like to watch that with you.
Yeah.
I wonder, I get the impression that the Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper, Star Is Born is A Star Is Born for this time. Whereas,
and that's the good thing about A Star Is Born is they update the music and they update the type of pop star relationship based on current climate.
Whereas The Hustle was not the film for this time that it should have been or could have been.
No, it wasn't.
They could have took it and turned it, taken it and turned it.
Well, when they remade Peter Sellers' masterpiece of comedy, The Pink Panther, with Steve Martin, he was in the remake in 2005.
We could do that on this show.
That was my favourite movie when I was in primary school. And I would go around saying, I would like to buy a dance for us for... Like, it's such a bad movie. I tried to rewatch it recently. But it's so bad.
2005 Pink Panther is nothing like the original Pink Panther, is it? Like, well, in terms of... I can't remember, but I feel
like...
It's
Clouseau. He's a bumbling detective.
Yeah, but I feel like they did a good job. I mean, whether or not that's a good movie, I can't really remember, but I feel like they did a good job of creating a fresh take on it.
Yes, and I loved it as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's a fool. But I tried to rewatch it now, and I'm like...
And you've seen the original, right?
Yes, yes. And I was like, oh, this is just... It just feels... These sort of movies feel like old movies. So maybe just make some period movies, you know?
Mm. How many remakes has Steve Martin participated in?
Four. No, I don't actually know. He was in the Looney Tunes reboot. Looney Tunes Back in Action. Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember that.
With Brendan Fraser and yeah. Jenna Elfman and Timothy Dalton and Bugs Bunny.
Aren't they doing another Space Jam?
Yes, they are.
Wow.
Yeah.
That'll be pretty crazy. Anything else about the trilogy of
just that it's really interesting. Films? If like so, yesterday I started with The Hustle. I found Bedtime Story on YouTube. They're both an hour and a half each, so that's 3 hours of watching the same movie. And then I started rewatching Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I only got like half an hour in. I only had half an hour, but I basically watched, and I was like, "Holy shit!" It was a real experience.
So you were stuck in a loop.
I was stuck in a loop. And they say that line. What's the line? He's a small-time hunter or whatever. You know, if they start hunting rabbits, they might scare away the big game.
Yeah.
They say that in everyone. Yeah. And my mind was just like...
Well, again, like, okay. Amazing... parallel or homage between Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 8 was the use of the Grease man. What was his name?
Yes.
You
insert
don't remember either.
Name here.
Insert name here. Like they actually got the same actor. Like that was great. Just using a same line between three films. I mean, it's a bit lazy. In some instances, I think it works, but not for this maybe.
I don't know. There's a lot that doesn't work. And you know what? I told Liam I didn't like it. And he goes, "You just hate women." He knows how to push my buttons, that boy.
Did he see it?
No. No, he didn't. He doesn't. He doesn't know that I just hate bad movies.
All right. So, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Well, first I want to tell you.
Scores.
Another quick difference. In Bedtime Story, they are trying to swindle their mark out of... $25,000. In Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, they're trying to swindle her out of $50,000. And in The Hustle, they're trying to swindle him out of $500,000. That's inflation for you.
Thanks, it is. It is. Good job.
All right. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
I'm going to give it... 7.5.
So that is 7.25, which puts it sort of not quite so close to the top, but certainly not too far down the list. 7.25. We've got a couple of films on that score. Bugsy Malone, True Romance, American Gangster, and Bad Times at the Al Royale, all on 7.25.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice. That sounds about right.
I think so too. Like it's a good movie. It's a decent score. That sounds right to me. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. All right. What about The Hustle?
Well, I almost feel bad, but...
Yeah, I feel like we shouldn't even rate it because it's like, you know, the kid that came last at school and you're just like, oh, you did well. Like... Feels like putting down a dog that's not even sick. It's just a bad dog.
Oh, my God. I'm going to give it 4.
Oh, well, I'm giving it a 2. Which means that we have a new lowest. So Ocean's 11, Bloody Mama, well, the 1960 Ocean's 11, Bloody Mama and The Untouchables all have 4. Now on 3 points... We have a new low, unless one of the films that we've reviewed in between recording this and releasing this has done worse. But on 3, we've got The Hustle.
Yeah, depending on what happens between now and when this episode comes out, might be a little bit confusing. because there might be worse films that we've watched, yep. or maybe this will be referenced. We don't know. So apologies for that. But at this point in time, that's the worst film that we've watched.